Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 540 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a spotlight episode on Heroes in Crisis number one from writer Tom King. We have art by Clay Mann and pencils by Tomeu Morey and letters by Clayton Cowles. So obviously, this is a pretty important book at this point. It's got Crisis in the title and it's DC, so you know there must be something big going on. So, you know, DC's been promoting this for a while. I think the first time it was brought up was at the DC in DC event when Tom King mentioned doing a book about this place called Sanctuary. It's something that's kind of near and dear to his heart. At San Diego Comic-Con last year, there was a press breakfast on Friday, I believe it was. It's kind of hard to remember that far back. It was on a boat, and we all got like robes and masks, and just like the attendees of Sanctuary do. And Tom was talking about how he'd had a bit of a panic attack, a bit of a breakdown, and it kind of sparked him wanting to tell this story. He has kind of spent the last couple of years trying to understand like where that came from. Was it because he fought Al-Qaeda when he was in the CIA and, you know, all the PTSD and all that kind of stuff that goes with working in that kind of situation overseas and never knowing if you're going to come back home or see your family again? Or was it something else? Was it something from his childhood or the fact that his grandmother, who practically raised him, had passed away? It was a lot of things culminating for him, and it really kind of broke him down. And he also talks a lot about how pain is strength, right? It's something that we think about, especially as a guy, right? You're supposed to be macho, and you're not supposed to show your feelings, and you're not supposed to, you know, you're supposed to be a guy. You're supposed to be a man. You're not supposed to cry, and you're supposed to be tough and not show emotion. And the fact of the matter is, if you can endure pain or put up with, you know, all the garbage that's going on and still be a man, then, you know, that proves something about you. It proves something about your worth and who you are. And you shouldn't ask for help. And, you know, all these kind of archaic ideas of what it is to be strong. When in fact, the truth is, it often takes more strength to ask for help. It takes more strength to be vulnerable and say, you know what, I can't handle this. I'm not sure why I'm feeling this way. You know, I'm acknowledging the fact that I do have feelings, and some of them are negative, and I'm not sure how to handle them, and I'm not sure, you know, what I should do. And so Tom himself said he has kind of spent the last couple of years thinking about a lot of that stuff and in a way trying to put himself back together and be a better person, be a better writer, be a better husband and father. And this is a lot of what he's exploring here. So I feel like it's certainly a story worth telling and ideas worth exploring. I've talked a lot on this podcast in the past, especially when talking to certain writers, about the value of story. And I really believe that you can kind of get a snapshot of what a society is like during a certain period of time, sometimes a very extended, long period of time, by looking at the stories that they tell each other, by looking at their fiction. What is it that they feel is worth preserving in story, right? And when you look back at certain eras of humanity in the past, you can kind of see how the politics of the day and the prevailing feelings of society and culture at that time are kind of captured in amber in a way between the pages of a book, or, you know, even before there were books. It was story. Story has been around since language, since even before a written language, with cave drawings, sequential art and such. So there's something innate in us as human beings that leads us to tell stories, something that's uniquely human. It's imagination, and it's being able to come up with these ideas of these worlds that aren't real, and these characters that aren't, you know, that don't exist in reality, and yet through them and through their actions and through examining them and creating them and putting them through, you know, whatever drama or challenges that the writer chooses to have them face. In that story, in that exploration, there's worth there. There's worth in how the reader relates to it. There's worth in how the writer relates to it. And we can kind of use it as a mirror to reflect ideas and concepts and struggles in our own lives. And so I think that's really what Tom is doing here. And I had read an interview. I looked for the quote, but I couldn't find it before I started recording, about Tom saying that he didn't necessarily choose Harley Quinn and Booster. He went to DC with this idea of this Heroes in Crisis story, and it was kind of them that said, okay, yeah, this is a story we think will be worth telling, but these are the characters we want you to use in it. So I didn't ask Tom about that the last time I saw him at New York Comic Con, so I'll have to remember to ask him about that the next time I see him. But it's not really here nor there as far as who choosing who lives and who dies. Those may be choices that are out of his hands. And just because it has the word crisis in the title, people kind of expect a certain body count to some extent. And Tom, most recently in New York Comic Con, during his spotlight panel, was talking about the fact that he had talked to Marv Wolfman about the impact of having that word crisis in your title when it's a DC book, right? It comes with a certain amount of expectation and a certain amount of baggage. So unfortunately, because of that, there's a lot of eyes on the series. And so I think a lot of people look at it in context of, okay, this is a comic book story. This story exists within the DC universe. And we want it to be a good story, and we want it to be fun, and we want it to be impactful. But we don't want you to mess up anything that we don't want you to mess up. You know, each of us individually is fans. Oh, but don't kill this particular character, or don't kill that particular character. It's fine if you kill this other one, because I don't care about him. But see the problem here, right? Everybody has a different favorite character. No matter who you take off the board, you're going to be upsetting somebody. And again, I don't know that Tom was really the one that made those choices. You know, he may have said, okay, here's my idea for the story. And then DC says, okay, well, here's the people that we are going to put in that situation. Or it may have been a hybrid of the two things. You know, we just don't know. But the other thing that really gets me about people getting upset over some deaths in the first issue is it's comics. People come back from the dead in comics all the time. So I don't think we need to worry. I'm going to spoil this, right? It's been out for a couple weeks, and full disclosure, I'm going to spoil it. The biggest death, there's two big ones in here, and the biggest one is probably Wally West. And I saw a lot of people complaining online the day that this went out, like, oh my God, I'm done with DC forever. They just started correcting the ship from the garbage that was the New 52, and they brought Wally back. You know, Geoff Johns brought him back in the DC Rebirth event, and it was really heartwarming and touching, and you know, brought him back, and it was a symbol that DC was riding the ship, all that to just kill him, you know, a couple years later. Like, I don't understand. What part of it's comics, and now they can bring him back again, and maybe that'll tie in with the end of Geoff Johns' Rebirth. Like, why is that hard for people to understand, right? And when Heroes in Crisis first came out, I wasn't entirely convinced that what we were seeing was even real, right? Like, these people are in a facility, and they're being treated for, you know, PTSD or other problems. The idea of Sanctuary is it's a place where heroes can go when they're feeling overwhelmed, and a way of treatment may be to subject them to more stress, or put them in kind of a virtual reality environment to see how they react, to see what they need to do, and kind of how they can be better prepared the next time, or how to deal with these kind of situations. So when I read the first issue, I was like, is this even real? I mean, it's Tom King, right? And if anybody who read Mr. Miracle number 11 should know that, hey, things are not always what they seem. Tom really likes to experiment with storytelling, and just because you're reading something in particular on the page doesn't mean it's happening in the reality of the comic book world. So I've kind of backed off that theory a little bit, just because we've seen the Green Arrow issue by the Benson sisters, where they had the funeral for Roy Harper. Spoilers, he's the other big death that I mentioned. So that makes me kind of back off of that a little bit. I mean, it's still completely possible that somebody is just experiencing that in their augmented reality or their virtual reality as well, but it's a little less likely because they're crossing it over into some outside books. But all that being said, it doesn't mean that things can't change. I mean, Booster Gold himself is a time traveler. Right, there's no reason he can't go back in time and fix everything. So I have complete trust and faith in Tom King to tell a good story, and I just want to know what's going to happen next. I do feel like I would have, and there may have been worth in seeing some kind of status quo of Sanctuary to see how things work there before we introduce this murder mystery into the place. But I mean, I know there'll probably be some flashback stuff. There was some flashback stuff in the first issue with kind of a confessional type situation where Tom is breaking things down in 9-panel grids as he loves to do. So, you know, we may get a glimpse into Sanctuary and what Sanctuary is or was supposed to be in that way. But again, it might have been interesting to see. And I probably would have just been interested in seeing the character drama of just having it be like the status quo of Sanctuary rather than this murder mystery or this whodunit. So let me start diving into the issue here, and I'll talk more in detail about some of the characters and events after I do the synopsis. So the first page opens up, and we've got Booster Gold in. Well, actually, let me talk about the main cover first. It's got a ton of characters. It's by Clayman, and we see the Trinity right up front: Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. And Superman is holding a mask, because when you go to Sanctuary, you can go completely anonymously. No one knows that you're going there. The entire facility is manned by or operated by Kryptonian technology. So it's a lot of like androids, Kryptonian machines, and holograms or, you know, projections, not real people. There's no real people there other than the heroes that are there seeking treatment. So and no one knows that you've gone except for Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman. They're the ones that kind of keep the place going. And it's kind of an open secret that it's there, and it's not really talked about much. So that's kind of the situation with Sanctuary. And again, it's just for people who are feeling overwhelmed. There were a few tie-ins. It was mentioned a few times. It was mentioned, I think, in Damage and Batman with Poison Ivy. It was mentioned in Batman again with Booster Gold in the Gift storyline. In Red Hood and the Outlaws Annual 2, Roy Harper mentions that he's gonna go to rehab, and he's referring to Sanctuary. So it's been around for a little while, ever since they decided to greenlight the title. They've been slipping it in here or there to make us feel like it's been around the whole time. So again, Superman's holding kind of the robe and the mask, and the robe's got a lot of blood on it. And it's just, again, the attire that the heroes will wear when they go to Sanctuary. And then arrayed behind him are various heroes of the DC universe, most of them looking down, looking sad. In the foreground, we have the two suspects, I guess you'd say, in the kind of disaster, or whatever you want to call it, the terrible events that occurred at Sanctuary. So Harley Quinn on one side, Booster Gold on the other, and then a raid behind the Trinity. We've got just a who's who: Batgirl, Flash, Wally West, Robin, Martian Manhunter, Cyborg, Barry Allen, Flash, Starfire and Nightwing, Hal Jordan, Green Lantern, Mr. Miracle, Big Barda, Aquaman, Green Arrow, Black Canary, Dr. Fate, Arsenal, Roy Harper, Hawkman, Hawkgirl, Alfred, Captain Atom way back there in the distance, Vixen, Firestorm, Power Girl, Commander Steel, Phantom Stranger, Supergirl, Tom King himself, Catwoman. Did I mention Catwoman? Yeah, Tom King himself makes an appearance back there. Looks like Red Robin is there. So again, a real who's who of the DC characters. So as we get to the first page, it opens with Booster Gold sitting at the counter of a diner, and his costume's got a couple rips in it, a couple scrapes, and he's getting a cup of coffee. And we find out, according to the waitress that's pouring his coffee, that it's her pleasure to serve him, and they don't get too many heroes in Gordon, Nebraska. And as she says that, one of the patrons notices Harley Quinn looking through the window, saying there's another hero coming. And Booster Gold says, that's not a hero, that's a villain. And the waitress says, well, now, is there going to be a fight? And Booster very calmly, matter-of-factly says, yeah, there's going to be a fight. So it's interesting that he says it in such a calm fashion. He doesn't even turn around to look at Harley. He almost seems to know it's going to be her, like without even looking. And her costume looks like it's pretty torn up as well. So it certainly looks like she's been in a fight too. As we turn the page, we get a really cool double page splash with just this big red streak that's flying through the sky. So obviously Superman heading for Sanctuary because of the terrible thing that's happened. And it's really cool. We get like shadows from clouds on this flat farmland that spells out heroes in a crisis. So Clayman made it like part of the art itself, which is really cool. On the following page, we get Harley in one of those 9-panel grids that I was mentioning. It's got the Sanctuary symbol behind her on the wall. She's kind of talking about some of the things that she believes in and why she's there. She says, I'm Harley Quinn. I don't believe in trauma. She says, oh, I know it's a thing and everyone thinks it's real, but you know, I spent years of my life listening to these people because, you know, Harley Quinn was Dr. Harlene Quinn at one point, who was a psychiatrist. So she's talking about how all these people ever did was kind of whine, and she shouldn't have been listening. She should have been beating them with a sledgehammer. And she says, bang, 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 bang. So is she talking about banging them with a sledgehammer? Is she saying bang because that's what comes out of the Joker's gun, right? The classic Joker gun where he used to pull the trigger and the little flag would come out and say bang. She does mention pudding in her little soliloquy here. Pudding. Which is what she used to always call the Joker. But you can see as she's saying this, bang, 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 she's starting to break down. And the last panel, she's covering her face and saying, God, like why is she there? You know, like she's always been a bit crazy. But Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor in their recent run have kind of taken her out of the shadow of the Joker and made her her own person in a way. But I wouldn't necessarily consider her stable. So it's an interesting choice to have her here as maybe one of the suspects. And who is Harley Quinn exactly, right? Is she a hero? Is she a villain? Is she an anti-hero? You know, what are her powers exactly again? World-class gymnast, apparently. She was like an Olympic-level gymnast in college while she was studying to get her degree in psychology. The Joker Venom or whatever he gave her some limited enhanced strength and kind of endurance and resiliency. I suppose I could buy that a little, but I don't know. She's super popular and that's fine. I don't begrudge anyone loving Harley Quinn, but again, I don't really, with this newfound popularity she has, I still don't really have a handle on who she is. Right, because Jimmy and Amanda write her totally one way, and then she shows up in Suicide Squad as something completely different. Some writers write her a little crazier than others. Is it all an act? So, if anything, I hope that in this Heroes in Crisis series, we can kind of nail it down, narrow it down. Who, Tom, why don't you let us know who is Harley Quinn, even if it's just your interpretation, but give me one that I can understand and give me one that's a little consistent. So as we turn the page, the waitress is asking Harley Quinn if she wants anything to eat. She's like, oh, I don't know. Do you have any dessert? And she mentions tapioca pudding that they have, they can put whipped cream on, or they have some fresh peach pie. And she says, I'll have the pie. It sounds wonderful. And some coffee. And then turns to Booster and says, can I tell you a secret, Goldie? You promise not to tell? And he promises. And she says, I hate pudding. So pretty interesting. And definitely a kind of a little aside there that shows that she really has moved on from the Joker. So she gets her pie and she starts eating it. And she says, this is perfect. Smells like America. Whatever that means, right? So, I mean, it smells like freedom. It smells like hope. It smells like life. It smells like happiness. Or is it something else altogether? Is it her talking about the current state of America, right? The divisiveness and the people at each other's throats and the most recent events of Sanctuary, kind of playing that out in miniature, right? She can still smell the death on herself. I mean, we haven't seen that. We don't know about the catastrophe yet, but you know, I've read the whole issue obviously several times. So, you just wonder what exactly she's referring to there. So as we turn the page, we get a big boom, and I'm led to believe this is the sonic boom of Superman flying overhead, getting to Sanctuary, and we see some crows in some tall grass with some really large white wings behind us, and we see one of the crows with what looks to be a mask and some gore in the mask, and it looks to be Blue Jay, who is a character who can fly. He was in Justice League, I think pretty recently, actually. He was in Justice League. First appeared back in the Justice League, like international days. And it looks like his little body is getting ripped apart and eaten by crows. I mean, it's pretty gross when you think about it. So, again, expert art here by Clay Mann with the birds. It's gory, but it's not too gory. And we see Superman in the distance, and we see he's got some little circular movement lines around him, which give us that sense of movement and that sense of him having broken the sound barrier. So as he swoops in, it looks like a farmhouse, pretty isolated out in the middle of nowhere in these wheat fields. And he's saying to somebody, okay, I'm here. And then as we turn the page, we get another of the confessional scenes. And this time it's Blue Jay himself saying, I'm Blue Jay, I shrink. And he shrinks and shows us, I control it really well. But the problem is lately, like the last month or so, I can't control it. And I don't know how to say it, but I go to sleep and I wake up small. And I have all these sheets on me, all over me, like an ocean, like I'm drowning in my own bed. And I know it's because of Silver Sorceress and that arrow. I see it's so obvious, but I still don't want to drown. So clearly he's dealing with something that happened to him recently, and that's why he's at Sanctuary. So as we turn the page, we see Harley Quinn is finishing up her pie, and she starts telling Booster that there's something that Freud wrote, and she thinks about it now and then. And she quotes it. She says, no one who, like me, conjures up the most evil of those half-tamed demons that inhabit the human beast and seeks to wrestle with them can expect to come through the struggle unscathed. So it's really kind of a comment on who Harley is as herself, right? She started as a psychologist or psychiatrist, so obviously she studied Freud, and she's talking about you could almost think of it as talking about just one patient, but probably multiple patients, but certainly her work with the Joker, right? She certainly worked with the Joker and conjured up the demons inside of him, the demons that inhabited him, and tried to save him because for some reason she was attracted to him and there was romantic feelings. And she certainly tried to wrestle with those demons, not realizing the whole time, of course, that the Joker was manipulating her. And she certainly didn't come through the struggle unscathed. So you can think of it in a myriad of ways. I mean, it specifically could apply to her and the Joker. It could apply to her and all her patients. It could also apply to everyone at Sanctuary who is trying to look within themselves and look at what it is going on in their own lives that they're struggling with, and they're trying to come through it as best they can and overcome it. And not that it won't leave scars, but these are heroes, right? I mean, that's what Sanctuary was established for by Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman to help those heroes in need who were struggling, right? They may come through it with scars, but at least they'll come through it. So you can think of it like that. You could take it one step further and think of it as Harley's actually referring to the fact that Sanctuary exists and the reason that it exists, but its own existence in self-examination of these heroes has now had this terrible event occur, and that's what she's talking about. That's where she says no one can come through unscathed, and that's why these deaths have occurred. So there's a lot of multi-level stuff here that you can think about, and you know, you can apply it to your own life. I'm sure that Tom's thinking of it in terms of what he did for the CIA as an intelligence officer. I can't remember if it was at San Diego at that press breakfast that I mentioned, or if it was in a later interview where I read that he said he feels like he's part of an entire generation, maybe as many as a million people who went over there over a, you know, period of 10 years or whatever it was to fight that war on terror, and the scars that were left from the things that they saw and the things that they had to do and the things that they experienced. They certainly had to look into the evil that is in men, or that is possible as humans, both men and women, and it's hard to come back from that unscathed, right? It's hard to come back from that struggle and wrestling with those demons and trying to stop terror and terrorism, and come back and just go back to, you know, baseball and barbecues and going to the grocery store and that kind of thing, right? It doesn't fit all back in the neat little box because you've experienced things that other people around you have never experienced and can't relate to. So again, there's a lot here in this quote from Freud, and I think that there's a lot of times that people look at this quote and a similar quote about looking into the void, and if you stare into the void too long, the void starts looking back at you. And I think it's actually a quote by Friedrich Nietzsche, where he says, if you stare into the abyss stares back at you. But the whole quote is, he who fights with monsters should be careful, lest he thereby become a monster. And if thou gaze long into an abyss, the abyss will also gaze into thee. So you can think of that as kind of an offshoot of what Freud's talking about and what Harley Quinn is quoting here. And it's like, there's a couple things there, right? Like if you stare too deeply, if you look too much inside yourself, you may not like what you see, and it's, you may find the monster within inside you, and it can then manifest outwardly. Is that a clue on what's happened? Is that a clue that either Harley Quinn or Booster snapped? Possibly. It's also kind of a warning, right, for what Sanctuary is. Like, you're trying to help these heroes. You're trying to give them a place where they feel safe and can work on themselves and work on overcoming the issues that they have. But you're also putting a bunch of people who are damaged all in the same place, all in close proximity, which can be kind of like a powder keg waiting to explode, right? So you've got to be careful. So you can look at it that way as well. So again, I think it's a story that where Tom is really kind of exploring feelings, and it's a crisis in a different way. You know, it's not a crisis on Infinite Earths where the red skies are manifesting and worlds are being destroyed by antimatter and characters are literally being blinked out of existence. This is a much more existential crisis. So in that way, it's almost more relevant to what's going on in the world today, as so many of us, at least in this country, are kind of fighting for our identities and fighting to be heard, when it seems like more and more the power and the ability to affect change is being concentrated in the hands of a very few. And the rest of us are kind of being left behind, so to speak. So again, story ideas that are really worth exploring. So Harley goes on to say that I conjured the most evil demon. I wrestled with him, and I've come through, and I'm well. I think I'm a bit scathed. So again, it looks like she may be referring to the Joker in that instance, but she is not unchanged by the experience. And as she's saying this, she's picking up a knife, which... it's certainly not a butter knife. It looks pretty sharp. It's on the counter. It was next to her pie, her utensils there. And she grabs that knife and she stabs Booster in the back as she's singing her own version of Old MacDonald Had a Farm. So Booster's caught unaware and he gets taken down pretty quick. And she's being stabbed multiple times before Booster's able to kind of protect himself and get his shield up and kind of get Harley off of him. So on the next page, we see him saying, "Harley, please don't. I don't want to hurt you." And she's telling him not to worry. He won't hurt her as she scrapes some of the blood off the knife and puts it under her eyes, kind of like eye black, and says, "You know, don't worry, pretty thing. You're not going to hurt me. I'm going to hurt you." Meanwhile, on the next page, we see Batman telling Superman that he's 13 minutes out and not to touch anything. And Wonder Woman herself is flying in and telling Bruce that Superman knows better than to touch anything. And Superman, for his perspective, says, "Yeah, I won't. I mean, I have to see they're all gone." And he's standing up on a hill. He's quite a ways from Sanctuary, but he's using his telescopic vision to look down at the scene in front of him. And there's many bodies in the grass. And as he kind of zooms in, we see some kind of a large white wing. So it could be one of Blue Jay's wings. We also see under his left armpit, there is a Green Lantern symbol. So it's possible that there was a Green Lantern there who was affected by this. We see another female who is dressed in the robe and the mask of Sanctuary. And she has on yellow pants and she's looks to have darker skin. So very well could be Vixen, I'm thinking. We also see... Commander Steel or Citizen Steel, as well as Lagoon Boy and Hotspot in a gray hoodie and with a cap on, baseball cap on. I can't help but think of Trayvon Martin. This is a political book in a lot of ways, and I just can't think that that's a coincidence. And so as we turn the page, we get Hotspot's confessional, and he says, "I'm Hotspot and I have a catchphrase. I'm just warming up." He says, "I'm good, right? I've been using a lot. Like every time I fight, sometimes I get scared, but I think a lot of people get scared and they just don't know what to do, what to say. So it helps, right? Knowing that you got something to say. I'm just warming up." And so that's actually the name of this issue. So you can take this, "I'm just warming up," as a few different ways. Like Tom King's just warming up. Like he's just getting started with this crazy story that he's going to tell, where it's super impactful. Or are we just getting warmed up with the body count? Are we just getting warmed up with the next phase of the entire DC universe? I don't know. It's yet to be determined. But meanwhile, Superman says Hotspot is confirmed. And so I'm going to assume that's a confirmed kill, but he doesn't use the word kill. It's almost like he's trying to detach himself from the situation you know, Bruce, Batman already told him don't touch anything. They're clearly treating it as a crime scene. So there's got to be some kind of emotional detachment in order to deal with this. You can't approach it just as like a normal person. You've got to kind of step outside yourself and view everything clinically, with some emotional detachment so that you don't miss anything. And it's a way to cope. And I have to imagine that Tom King in his time with the CIA overseas, had to do this himself firsthand. And so, I think I saw some people online saying that, they didn't understand why the Trinity didn't seem to be, riled up and emotional or angry or sad or whatever. And it's like, well, they're probably feeling all those things. And clearly Superman, I mean, it's not like he's, you know, firing off these sentences, one right after another. He's speaking, in a much slower cadence and a much slower pattern. So, and I think that's meant to show that clearly he's being affected by what he's seeing, but he's trying to do the job of, understanding what's going on, understanding what happened, or trying to best understand what happened, trying to piece it together so they can find the culprits and get to the bottom of this. So, I take that to be, he's very emotional, but he's just trying to hold it back. So meanwhile, he's saying he had a thing he would say, wasn't there, but I can't remember what it was. And, meanwhile, Booster and Harley are continuing their fight. Harley manages to get on his back, and, he's up in the air flying, and, he says, he manages to grab her, says, "I'm taking you somewhere." To the, and then he says, "Hall of Justice." You almost think maybe he's going to say to the sanctuary, right? Like she needs help. And then it's like he remembers, well, I can't, cause it's not there anymore. And he says, we all need justice. And, Harley says, "Oh yes, we very much do." Meanwhile, Superman has reached the entrance of sanctuary. And he says, "No sign of the greeter, no reaction at all." And he opens the door, and we see some blood on the steps there, and he's floating above, like he's not disturbing any of the crime scene. He's saying, "I'm going inside." And when he does, he says, Roy and whoa, and he can't even bring himself to say it. And he switches, instead of using their personal names, he switches to saying Arsenal and Flash are confirmed. So this again is, the panel that really had people upset. And it looks like Arsenal's holding the symbol of Sanctuary in his hand. Not sure what that's about. They did give some of those out at San Diego Comic-Con, so that was pretty cool. But yeah, I'm not sure why he's holding that. And Flash looks like he's holding the lamp that's laying on the ground next to him, like he was trying to turn it off. Don't know what that's about. And you also have to wonder, like, who could have gotten the drop on the Flash? Like, he's like a pretty tough guy to take down, right? I mean, just for the fact that it's hard to even catch him. But again, if it was Booster or Harley, if it was somebody he trusted, maybe that factored into it. So on the next page, we get Arsenal's confessional, and he talks about the fact that he's Arsenal, he's a superhero and an addict. So two things, he says, which is maybe something that he's always struggled with. Like what's his identity? Like, who is he? Is he a superhero? Is he an addict? He's been a father. He's been, kind of I wouldn't say a sidekick, but a protege of Green Arrow, all these different identities, right? And, we get this explanation from Tom, for Arsenal here, where he talks about, "When I started shooting up, it was for the health benefits, because he's got no powers except sticks with things on them. And so it's tough to fight and do the things that he does without the powers. And so he was hurting in every way. And so the doctors had him on pills and then more pills, and he kept getting hurt. And there was all these pills, you know, 6 doctors, 14 pharmacies, a guy who's not really a doctor, another guy who's only kind of a pharmacist. And pretty soon you find out you're killing your kidneys with these pills. So you get a needle to save your kidneys, because that's what superheroes do. And maybe you're saving money too. That's what superheroes do, right? They save things." It's kind of, I think it's relatable, right? It's the way a lot of people have fallen into addiction, whether it's, you know, a factory worker or a housewife or a professional athlete or whoever. You know, you get hurt, you take some of these pills for the pain, and then what you end up discovering is that the addiction to these pills is far worse than any injury or pain from that injury that you could have endured, and it can ruin your life. It can kill you. You know, Roy has struggled with that for a long time. And I kind of give DC credit that, you know, the Speedy is a junkie storyline from way back when, and they've always kept it as part of the character. And I think there's worth there, again, worth in story that's relatable to people, because it happens in the real world too. You know, Arsenal is a superhero. He is supposed to be better than the average Joe, but even he suffers from this weakness. So the scene shifts back to Harley and Booster in the air. She's still trying to stab him, gets another stab in. And she says, "Do it," or Booster rather says, "Do it and we both fall." And she's like, "Well, yeah, duh," and stabs him anyway. Meanwhile, Superman says Sanctuary is confirmed. Apparently everybody is dead there. And we see written on the wall above the fireplace, "The Puddlers are all dead." And we see some, Kryptonian androids, one of which looks like Pa Kent, another looks like Ma Kent, a third, can't really say, almost looks like Vixen in a way, but obviously not. And there's blue all over, blue liquid, which I imagine is similar to their version of blood. And they're in pretty rough shape, kind of taken apart pieces, a lot of wires everywhere. A tray of cookies is overturned, a broken plate, and Superman again really affected. So not sure about the people who are saying, yeah, don't think they're emotional enough. Because Superman himself says, "We built this to help them. I mean, to help us. And now," and he puts his hand over his eyes and bows his head. Meanwhile, Puddler, and I'm assuming that's Batman, which is a little strange that Batman wouldn't know what a Puddler is. But Wonder Woman answers by saying, "It's a term for those who work in iron, who make weapons and swords. Puddlers skim the molten metal, removing the impurities so the iron can be strong." So that can almost be a few different things as well, right? The Puddlers are all dead. So does that mean that Sanctuary itself is dead? Like the automatons and the holographic and the virtual reality infrastructure that was there, that because that's what they were doing for the heroes, right? Like they were helping them overcome these impurities so they could be strong, helping them overcome their weaknesses, remove their weaknesses that they're feeling because of the everyday things that they're experiences as heroes, so that they can be stronger, right? So you can think of it that way. You could also think of it as the heroes themselves were the Puddlers, and they were removing the weaknesses inside themselves. But whoever did this decided that they weren't worthy of doing that, or they weren't capable of doing it, or they should have never been weak in the first place. You can think of it that way, or you can think of it as this is somebody, and I'm reminded of the recent run in Detective Comics by Brian Edward Hill with the Karma character who fought Batman, who went to Gotham and was trying to take out the other members of the Bat family because he didn't feel like they were worthy of Batman. And by allowing them to exist, Batman was opening himself up to vulnerability and weakness. And so he was trying to remove them so Batman could be the singular monster that strikes fear into the hearts of criminals everywhere, right? So you can think of it like that. Whoever did this is themselves removing the weak in the hero community by killing all these heroes. So yet to be determined, but it is an interesting choice of phrase to use. And as Wonder Woman kneels down and she says, she kneels down to close Wally's eyes, and she says what it means, like why that message is there. I'm perhaps not the world's greatest detective, but luckily she's there with Batman. And Batman says someone was being treated here by Sanctuary along with a lot of other heroes, and that someone killed Sanctuary and a lot of other heroes. He is making an assumption that it was somebody there. And I think he makes that assumption because Sanctuary was so secret, like other than the heroes that went there and Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman themselves, nobody knew it existed. So it would be kind of tough for somebody from the outside to have done this. Maybe it's somebody who previously was at Sanctuary and returned because they felt that it didn't do a good enough job removing their impurities. I don't know. It remains to be seen. But Batman goes on to say, it means what we already know it means, what it always means. Our hope for redemption is now just another hunt for vengeance. So that's an interesting aspect there. There's a lot there in that line, because you think of Sanctuary. I don't think of Sanctuary as a place it's not an idea that Batman himself would have come up with, or even Wonder Woman. It feels more like a Superman kind of idea, right? Like Superman came up with this idea of we need to support the heroes in our community. We need to make sure they understand that no matter how dark things get, there's always another dawn coming. There's always that sense of hope. I mean, to me, because when you look at the statement from Batman, hope, redemption, and hunt are in bold in the word balloons. So you can almost look at that as the three aspects of Sanctuary, and they represent the three aspects of the Trinity of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. So Superman certainly is the hope. When you think of redemption, I would put that more on Wonder Woman. She always believes the best in people, and that no matter what terrible things you've done, you can overcome them and you can redeem yourself and you can be a good person. And then Hunt, obviously that's Batman. He's more a doer than a talker. He's all about vengeance and the dark night and justice will prevail. So it's interesting that Batman has basically turned around and said, it's up to us. It's up to Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman to solve this, because Superman's idea to kind of implement on a broader scale what is an ideal that Wonder Woman embodies, this ideal of redemption and being able to, as a hero, go through terrible things and see terrible things and be able to go to this place and kind of rest and recharge and make sure you're on the right path and you feel redeemed and worthy to be doing what you're doing. That's all gone now, right? It's now become just another one of Batman's mysteries to solve, one of Batman's missions to hunt and to hunt for vengeance, to hunt for justice for these people that have been killed. So it goes to show that when you look at those three characters, the Trinity, you really have three different sides to heroism in a way, right? You have the beacon of hope, the beacon of light that is Superman. You have Wonder Woman kind of as the bridge, who may be willing to take things a little farther, a little darker. Think of her like snapping Maxwell Lord's neck, for example. I mean, she is born and raised as a warrior first and foremost. But she does have some belief in the goodness of people and that they can turn away from the darkness. And then you have the practical side of Batman living in that dark side, aspect of humanity, you know, criminals and depravity and what have you. And he looks at it from a more logical perspective, doesn't worry as much about the why or the how, in as much as it doesn't matter. He'll think about those things in terms of, does it help me solve the mystery? Does it point me in the direction of the perpetrator? But he's about bringing someone to justice, hunting them down to make sure they pay for their crime. So it's cool. It's a cool scene by Clay Mann as Batman turns around and says that our hope for redemption is now just another hunt for vengeance. I think that's the line where everybody's like, oh man, shit just got real for sure. So as we turn the page, it looks like Booster and Harley have crashed into like some kind of a farm where there's a little bit of a pond there. And Booster's pretty shaken up, as indicated by his word balloons here. They're a little squiggly. And he says, you know, I'm such a, and he doesn't even finish the sentence. He's like, you kill me, I save you. Even after you, you know, we were all there to get help. We were all the same. We all hurt. And I saw you, Harley. I saw you hurting us and killing us. And Harley says, oh, Goldie, how deep did you crack? She's like, I didn't. I saw you. I ran. I stupidly ran from you like a coward or a clown. I didn't save them, but I didn't kill them. You did. And she's blaming Booster. So is what either of them saw reality? Or are they both being manipulated? I would tend to think it's the latter, right? Like, I don't think either one of them is responsible for what happened. But it's entirely possible that they both were, or one or the other, because these are two of the more damaged characters in the DC universe. And I'll talk a little bit more. I mean, I talked quite a bit about Harley already, and I'll talk a little bit about Booster in a second here. But let me cover the next page first, because it's Booster's confessional, his 9-panel grid, which is the last issue, last page of the issue. And he says, I'm Booster Gold, the greatest hero you never heard of, and you are Sanctuary. And again, he's putting on the airs. He's putting on that face that Booster Gold always puts on, and trying to be popular. And, you know, when he first showed up, when Dan Jurgens created him and he came back in time, and we didn't know that at first, but he was trying to be popular and almost a corporate hero. He was like selling cereal and action figures and things like that. And so here's where we get an idea of a little bit of what Sanctuary is through some exposition from Booster. He says, and you are Sanctuary, the robot super reality therapist built with Kryptonian tech and infused with the will of Batman, the compassion of Wonder Woman, and of course, the honor of Superman. So there's kind of three different aspects of the Trinity that kind of dovetail into the hope, the redemption, and the hunt that we were just talking about. And so Booster goes on to say, you know, you help heroes who've seen too much or done too much. You know, us heroes are fighting all the time. And because of all that, we're messed up, including Booster Gold. So he's acknowledging that there's something wrong there. And then for the last three panels, he kind of shrinks in on himself. And great job by Tomoe More on colors, because even those bottom three, it's very subtle, but the colors are a little less bright. And it kind of dovetails in with what he's saying as he says, okay, then I'm here. I'm ready. I'm talking. Help me. So, and then we get to be continued. So for those that aren't familiar, Booster Gold was a football player in the future, a very popular football player. And his dad was a degenerate gambler and got in over his head. And Booster, in order to save his father's life, had to throw a game. And when it got out that he'd thrown this game, his career was ruined and he was a disgrace. And for whatever reason, probably because his father was a degenerate gambler, and I think he didn't have a good home life, right? And it always affected him. And so getting the validation and the adulation on the field was everything to him. That was so tied up in his self-worth. And so when he had to throw the game, it showed a couple things. It showed how much he cared about his father, despite his father being kind of a scumbag. But it also showed kind of a willingness to sacrifice, right? To try to be something bigger than himself and to feel like he belonged. So once he lost that, once he was no longer able to pursue that football career, he became a night watchman at a museum, some kind of a superhero museum. And while there, he got the idea to steal a bunch of future tech and go travel back in time and become a hero. So he stole a Legion flight ring, the suit that could have like power blast, a belt that was like Brainiac 5 belt that created an impenetrable shield, and a few other things. And he came back in time to become a hero. And so that's not exactly a heroic start, right? And he's always had familial issues and daddy issues. And in the Geoff Johns series, it came much later, he ended up working for the a Rip Hunter, the Time Master, and traveling through time and kind of policing time and make sure that to make sure things were going as they're supposed to. And so again, he often would be behind the scenes fixing things that nobody knew was wrong. And that's where the whole idea of the greatest hero that you've never heard of. And so there have been various times over the career of Booster Gold where he's been written a little more seriously, a little less seriously. He's always been more of a lighthearted character, but there's always been a darkness in the background based on the origin that Dan Jurgens created for him and the fact that he got his start. I mean, technically he's a criminal, right? Like he stole all this tech and came back in time. Including a time bubble he stole. And so it's an inauspicious start, right? It's not what you would want. And you worry about the character of somebody like that would throw a football game, even if it was to save their father, and to steal all this technology from this museum. So there's darkness there. And then in the most recent, the Gift storyline in the Batman title, as I mentioned, he decides to, almost give Batman like It's a Wonderful Life type gift, right? Like, that classic Christmas movie with, Jimmy Stewart, where, the angel Clarence comes and shows Jimmy Stewart what life would be like without him. So Booster does something similar. He saves Bruce's parents from being killed in the alley that day because he wants Bruce to know, as a wedding gift, he wants Bruce to know that things happened the way they had to happen, and he shouldn't feel regret for not being able to save his parents or his parents having been gone. It's when you stop and think about it, it's a terrible idea, right? Like even if it had worked out perfectly, you're showing Bruce that he should be happy his parents are dead. Well, then does that mean he shouldn't be Batman anymore? It doesn't. Yeah, it's just a really bad idea. And things go completely sideways. It doesn't work at all the way Booster would want it to. And he ends up being a prisoner in the Batcave for what seems to be an extended period of time, months, if not years. And I don't think he comes through it in the best shape. So considering that and the way things finally sort of kind of get fixed, but not really. I mean, everything still happens the way that it's supposed to, but Booster still has all those memories. And I think something really broke in him at that point. I'm not sure what, and maybe it was something that was broken all along and it was just brought to the surface by this ordeal he endured when he was basically chained up in the Batcave for, as I said, months, if not years. So he's an interesting choice as a dark character, because as I said, he's always been such a lighthearted character, but there is a lot to explore there. And you think of somebody like Robin Williams, who, you know, always had a smile and always seemed happy and loved to make other people laugh. And then when he committed suicide, there was a certain segment of people who understood it, but there was a huge other segment of people that didn't understand it. Like, here's a guy that had wealth, that had success, fame, celebrity, and could make so many people laugh, but he himself was really suffering inside. So almost think of Booster Gold as the Robin Williams of the DC universe in a way. Here's this guy from outward appearances that is happy-go-lucky, smiley, whatever, but underneath the surface, there are a lot of issues there. And so when you think about it, he's exactly the kind of hero and character who Sanctuary was created for, because he can go there anonymously and try to get help. So I think ultimately, I don't think that he did it. I don't think that Harley Quinn did it. And I think ultimately, King is going to be able to use this story to show just how heroic those two characters are, which for me is great for Booster, because I've always seen him as a very heroic character, even if he has been sometimes played for laughs. As I said earlier, I'm hoping for more of a baseline, more of a consistency and understanding, at least for myself, on who Harley Quinn is. So I'm hoping Tom King can give us that throughout the series. So it's 9 issues. It originally was going to be 7 with a couple of one-shots, and then they decided to just move the one-shots into the regular title. so as to avoid confusion. So I think we're going to continue to get a lot of Clayman art. I know a couple of those one-shots are done by Mitch Gerrits, so looking forward to that art as well. And as far as the art here, it's second to none. Clayman is in my top three artists working today, has been for a long time, ever since I saw his work on the Ninjak title over at Valiant from Matt Kent. That opening scene where Colin King is looking at the movie screen and through over a series of panels, Clayman zooms in on his eye. This is Ninjak as a small child, and Clayman zooms in on his eye. And as you get closer and closer to the eye, you can literally see the movie, the action happening in the movie reflected in the eye of Ninjak. And that, to me, that I was like, wow. This guy is incredible. How is he not a superstar already? So I think this series is really going to put him on the map. So kudos to everybody involved. I think a really great story, a really great start. As I said, I know some people haven't been pleased. They're worried about the deaths. I would say, don't worry about that. It'll all get resolved. Wally West will be back. Roy Harper will be back. Maybe not at the end of the series, but eventually. The characters are too good and have too much history to stay off the stage for too long. So I certainly expect them to be back at some point. For others who say, oh, it's kind of slow, kind of boring, man, it's one issue. It's just getting started. It's just set up. I would expect in the next issue, the pacing to pick up and things to get moving. So, but it's, as I said, it's a crisis of existentialism. It's a crisis of character. It's a crisis of politics, of divisiveness. It's not a crisis in terms of, oh, this is going to destroy the universe, like the physical universe. It seems much more likely that the souls, the heart, the very fabric of who the individual heroes of the DC universe, that's what's being threatened, right? And again, it parallels our own struggles in this country recently very well, and I can't wait to see where Tom takes it from here. I did ask him at New York Comic Con about the reaction to the series, if it was kind of tough, if he had a lot of people reaching out, and he didn't really answer me directly. He just said, it's all good, man. Like, once you've been through the backlash of the Bat Wedding, everything else is just gravy. So, you know, I don't know if people are blaming him, if people are mad at DC in general. But again, I would say, I would preach patience, be patient, read the story. I think it's going to be good. And, if not, if you want to jump off, hey, that's your prerogative. Go ahead, jump off, maybe wait till it's over, pick it up and trade, wait to hear, what other people think of it when it's over. I'm sure you can read plenty of reviews and articles and such about each issue as it comes out, or tune into the Comic Source and hear about each issue as it comes out. And at that point, you can decide if you think it's worth your time, or not, right? Like, not every comic is written with everybody in mind, and you certainly can vote with your wallet and with your dollars, and that's the best way to do it. But I would just implore you that if it's not for you, if you don't find yourself enjoying it, if you don't like it, again, there's nothing wrong with that, but there's no need to bash people. There's no need to threaten people. There's no need to tell Tom that he's phoned it in, or he's garbage, or whatever, right? Like, this is a project that's near and dear to his heart. It's something that, you know, he's working on himself currently, and working through it by telling this story that I think is interesting and worth telling. So, and he's a person. It's something I find a little bit ridiculous. I have to remind people that when you're attacking somebody online, that's a person, right? Nobody sets out to make a bad comic. So just keep that in mind. They have feelings too. And again, if you don't like it, you don't have to pick it up, but there's no reason to bash it. There's enough negativity out there in the world, and especially on the internet. And there's also so many great comics out there right now. There's no need to focus on the ones you don't like. You're much better off talking about the stuff that you do like. So you can ensure that whatever titles you're reading are, or help try to ensure that whatever titles you're reading have good sales and are successful and continue to be made, so you get to continue to read them. It's kind of a no-brainer when you think about it. So again, I really enjoyed this issue. I think there's a lot here. There's a lot to examine, and I feel that the examination is very worthwhile, and I can't wait to see what happens in issue 2. All right. I want to thank everybody for joining us as always. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes as well as follow all our convention coverage. Quick reminder, my last convention for the year will be Los Angeles Comic Con coming up Halloween weekend in Los Angeles, California. I think I'm just going to be there Saturday. So if you're going to be there on Saturday, definitely let me know. I always love to meet up with listeners, take some pictures, and hand out some lanyards. So once again, I want to thank everybody for joining, and we'll talk to you next time.